This is 99hobbies.com. Do you know anyone who was at the Boston Marathon this year? I do. Dave Jenkins, N1MXV, was there, but not as a runner.
Yeah, this is Whiskey One Mike, special event station for the 2006 110th running of the Boston Marathon. Let's do a 3 o'clock call-up. This is N1MXV, net control.
Hey, Dave, it's good to see you again.
Likewise, as always.
Last time we talked about some of the reasons why ham operators are used for communications for marathon logistics and so forth, but before we get into that, I thought we could sort of define some terms. What is a directed net? Or let's start with what is a net?
Oh, a net is just you have a bunch of hams all communicating on the same frequency, and the net is that cluster of hams talking through whatever facility. And a directed net is when there's one person called net control who's in charge of all the coordinating all the communications. Otherwise, you get 15 people all trying to talk at once. It's a lot of people are familiar with dispatcher from taxi cab. That's a directed net. Everybody throws out an ID asking to be heard, and then the net control acknowledges them, and he directs everything.
And do you always use a repeater for this kind of thing?
No, actually. It depends entirely on what the scope of the net is. On the marathon, there were probably six, even more, nets going simultaneously. And
These are on different frequencies?
On different frequencies, different repeaters, or some simplex frequencies. The bus net obviously covers the entire course, 26.2 miles. It's a little far for simplex communication between all those, so they use the repeater. But then the area around the finish line, we have multiple simplex nets. And we do have a couple of backups. We even have a vehicle with a crossband repeater in it. So if we have somebody who can't quite make it to the net control, they can go through there.
Now, I heard something that sounded like a call sign when people were checking in, but it wasn't a call sign. For example, he'd said something like, net control, this is W11. What was that?
Oh, a tactical call sign.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of the events like this, it can get a little confusing trying to remember whose call sign is what, whereas if you have some sort of label that's more associated with what you're doing, what your capacity is, then it's easier to coordinate things. So for the net that I was involved with on the marathon, we had 14 sweeps teams.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was sweep one, sweep through, through sweep 14.
So it's not like a secret code or anything like that?
Oh, no. It's actually very clear. But it doesn't take the place of a call sign. You're still an amateur radio operator operating on amateur frequencies and still bound by Part 97. So every 10 minutes you have to use your call sign. And we did have a special event station of Whiskey One Mike.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, while we did use that, each ham is still responsible for their own transmissions and their own ID.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me about your day last Monday. What time did you get up? What time did you hit the sack? And what did you do in between?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. I get up at 4:15, and we rendezvous outside a local fast food restaurant. No name brands there. And we meet at 5 o'clock, and then vanpool down to Boston, making another stop. We started in Gardner. We made a stop in Leominster at a restaurant and got coffee and picked up some more people for the little caravan into Boston. And we get in so early because our allotted slot for the organizational meeting where everybody does the check-ins and they hand out the jackets and credentials and all that is at 7 o'clock. So we have to be in there in time for the 7 o'clock meeting. And since most of our people are adjuncts to the medical capacity, they attend the medical meeting. Some of them also attend the security meeting. And then, so the medical meeting was, 9 or 10. And so there's pretty large blocks of time where you don't really have anything to do, especially working the finish line area. Most of the activity doesn't happen, oddly enough, until they start to cross the finish line. So we can spend a lot of time just sitting around waiting. In the past, when I've been just on an individual basis, all I had to worry about was my equipment. pull the HT out of the bag doesn't take very long. So I was pretty you know, set up pretty early and had a lot of time to just sit around and wait or crash on one of the medical cots or go scope out the place. This time, being involved with net control, we had a lot of stuff to set up in the command trailer, but we were still set up hours before we needed to be, and then just hang around. And I always joke that, unfortunately, right about the time that your body says, okay, that's a day, let's go to bed, is when things start to happen, and now you're busy, and then you're flat out till from the time they start crossing the finish line till we start wrapping things up around 6 or 7. The individual sweep teams started to disband around 6 o'clock. That's at the discretion of the captain, who's usually a nurse, based on the demands of the crowd and the size and the rate. And then once they've all disbanded, we start packing up, but we also do a lot of work with the buses and things, and we ran that well past 6. I don't think we actually broke camp till around 7:30, and we didn't pull out of the parking lot in Boston until 8:30. So I probably got home 10:30, so, and to bed at 11, so from 4 o'clock to 11 was a long day.
That's a pretty complete day, that's for sure. How long have you been planning for this?
Well, it's one of those things you sort of have in the back of your mind for a lot of the year as you come across them and go, ooh, that'd be really handy to have on whatever. And you tend to, just as a pack rat / geek, tend to add to the bag of goodies and have. But actually preparation time, getting ready for it, I'd say start a week ahead of time, start making sure everything works and, make sure the HT you haven't used in a little while is still functional. And this time I sort of had a little fire drill that I had my bag packed and I'm ready to go. And I got the call saying, you're not going to be a portable sweep member this time. You're going to be net control. So it's like, empty the bag. And suddenly I don't need a bunch of low-power, portable, lightweight stuff. Now all of a sudden I need 50 watts of power supply, mag mount antennas, and completely different set of demands.
Very different, yeah. Of all the things that you thought about might happen, which things went the way you expected?
One contingent certainly was power. I had a really nice setup, which I think I have some pictures I'll let you have.
Okay, good.
I have a 30-amp Astron power supply into a power gate switch for a failover to batteries, then into the 742 Kenwood tri-band radio. And so that way, if anything were to happen with power, it'll just switch over. And in fact, when we had everything all set up and we're working out the kinks, and the other 7 radios in the command trailer all went dark and quiet, I was like, what? That was no problem.
And we'll put links in the show notes, too. That's from the PowerGate, is from West Mountain Radio.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I had everything in this nice little case that I picked up somewhere along the line with padded sides, and everything just fit into this nice 67-pound suitcase full of stuff. But in addition to when all the power went out, which was a breaker issue, but I also found out the hard way that one of the outlets that we had in the trailer was sort of flaky, and if the wires got pushed a certain way, then it cut out. And I never even noticed that. I spent several minutes operating off battery. It wasn't until I looked down and went, oh, why isn't that light on in the front of the power supply? But again, it just never missed a beat.
Yeah, and Murphy's Law is going to be sure that if the time that you really need to have that backup power, that some kind of emergency is going to be happening, and you'll be ready for it. So that was...
Right, and I was actually... I joke that I always used to come ludicrously overprepared. And this time I had a completely different set of demands, so I wasn't entirely sure what to bring, but somebody else anticipated possibly needing extra volts, so I had, in addition to the one 17-amp-hour battery I had on mine, I also had 3 more in a bag. That's why the trailer was sort of listing to one side.
Telling me earlier about a situation where somebody's mic was stuck open, could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, it's actually, over the years, it's been a recurring problem. With all the ambient noise at the marathon, and then every so often you find yourself in a position where suddenly a band literally strikes up, and you're sort of overwhelmed by noise. But a headset is an absolute necessity. So you can hear and you can be talking right into a mic and be heard. But unfortunately, most of the headsets, you know, have a very convenient button for the push to talk, and like the one that I have it's an ICOM headset, and it has three different modes: Vox, push to talk, and push on, push off. And occasionally, either somebody leans on the button, and so it's you know they're throwing a dead carrier or just broadcasting the local ambient noise. Sometimes somebody will have a headphone connector come out partway and then short out and just key the radio. We've had people that accidentally set it on Vox, and you suddenly hear, you know, for as long as there's noise, which is all the time.
Yeah, that's a definite no-no.
Yes, Vox has lots of risks. And then also the push-on, push-off, you know, if you get into that mode and don't realize it, you key up to say something, and you're keyed until you tell it to unkey. But so it happens a lot, and once again, we had it happen this year that somebody, I'm not sure exactly what happened, but they were transmitting for an extended period of time, and we've never been able to figure out in the past who was doing it in a timely fashion. This time, somebody in the trailer had an HT with a short duck and used body shielding to attenuate the signal, and we determined that it had to be fairly close, but that really didn't help much because it's a fairly small area. And then it hit me that, well, they're transmitting 5 watts, and I'm transmitting 50 watts into an antenna with some gain. So while they were keyed up, I just made an announcement that somebody's throwing a dead carrier. If you can hear me, it's not your radio, and when it stops, I'll make this announcement again. And then I waited for the radio to time out, and then when it finally did, or I don't know if it timed out or if the guy stopped leaning on the button or what, but then I just made an announcement saying, we just had a problem with a dead carrier. Anybody who didn't hear me say that it's not you, it's probably you. And one of the guys reported in and said, oh, I just got this brand new headset from somebody and I'm still working out some of the kinks. So we were able to identify it in a timely fashion for once.
That's a creative way to solve that problem. It's you can't say who's doing it because he won't hear you because he's transmitting.
Exactly.
Oh, that's a great idea. So after all this, when are you going to start planning for next year? Tomorrow?
yeah, pretty much. I want to pick up another power supply. The 30-amp one actually wasn't mine, so I'll probably scout for one at the next Hamfest or see what I can find. Something, switching power supplies are getting clean and might be actually an option rather than the great big heavy ones, but we'll see.
As a matter of fact, I just picked up one from MFJ that seems to be working out nicely, and there's a big difference in weight.
Indeed.
Like from 5 to, 30 pounds between the two.
Yeah, I moved what I thought was a radio, and it turned out to be a 25-amp switching power supply. It's like, no, sir.
Did you have enough volunteers this year?
Volunteerism has been off. I think it's, you know, people say the hobby is cyclic in how many people take part in things and their level of activity in just radio in general. But we're down quite a few hams from the numbers that we've had in the past. And we had, I think, 4 last-minute cancellations and a couple of no-shows, which really kind of left us stuck. But we had a couple other people volunteer and last-minute volunteers. And also, I think we ended up getting 3 guys from the start line who obviously finish up their responsibilities long before we do at the finish line. So we had a few of them come down and volunteer to help out. And everybody had a pretty good time, so I made a point to say, you know, and tell your friends and tell them what a good time you had. And if they got tickets, and have them you know, get in touch with us.
Well, that's good. I hope that you have as much success year after year. Now, how many have you been to? You said
I'd have to count the jackets, but I think this is my 12th year.
I was thinking a dozen or so. That's quite a bit. That's great. This year, I've maintained a 51-year tradition. I did not run the marathon again this year. Do you think you're going to be running next year yourself?
No. It is kind of funny sometimes when you're wearing the volunteer jacket and people see the marathon emblazoned on there and they figure you ran the marathon. And fortunately, you can't see from the audio track, but I'm not exactly a svelte individual. And people, you ran the marathon? And they all with this look of incredulity. And I usually say something like, oh, yeah, 2 hours and 30 minutes. Didn't you see me on the news? Then I say, no, the runners get the medals, the volunteers get the jackets.
That's a good way to remember it. Dave Jenkins, N1MXV, thanks a lot for your time. Thanks for the interview. I've gotten email from people that have listened to the previous two, and I'm sure this one's going to be a big hit also. Thanks for your time, Dave.
You're very welcome.